If you have a badass bank card, do you have a pink one or the black one? I've got to say, both colors look and feel like a badge of honor. It's one of those little things that actually reflects how you've moved through life. Confident, intentional, and not afraid to do things differently. And that's really what Badass Bank is about. It was created to deliver true customer service, and honestly, you feel that. It's not just talk. They show up, they support you, and they make managing money feel a lot more human. What I love most is who they're for. Badass Bank is for the everyday badass, the people pushing through hard things, showing up for their families, rewriting their stories. Built by industry disruptors and backed by decades of banking experience, they're here to challenge the status quo and give you real control over your financial future. Badass Bank is looking for customers who expect more. So the question is, are you badass material? Consider this your invitation. Find your inner badass and visit badass.bank.
Member FDIC.
Springtime's the perfect time to turn the page and refresh your home style. The only problem? It can be expensive. Luckily, there's a better way to shop well-worthy pieces for less at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's negotiates with manufacturers to get you the best everyday low prices, giving the shopping power back to you. The power to get more style, comfort, and quality for less on amazing pieces like stylish mid-century dining sets made for hosting those big spring brunches, pop-up sleeper sectionals with all the bells and whistles so you can turn any room into a guest room, and next-level Bobopedic mattresses so you can get a great night's rest after you've finished redecorating every room. So, when you're ready to spring into new style, stop into your nearest store or shop online and see how you can get wow-worthy style for less with Bob's Discount Furniture.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
That's right, this is Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 134. I'm producer Darius Dameron. I'm joined, as always, by Toby Altizer and Grant Paulson. Grant Paulson's reporting live from Arlington, Texas, home of the All-Star Week festivities and the MLB draft, and he'll give us the latest from Arlington. But first, we must address the most important news heading into this podcast, which is, Grant, you got a foul ball. Grant, you got to tell us about it. You got a foul ball.
Yeah, we were at the Futures game. Me and my buddy are sitting there, ball comes over the screen, takes like three caroms, bounces off a couple hands, and comes to a stop right behind our seats. Can't do it a whole lot better. Now, we have a buddy named Ryan Clary who at one point had a chance at a home run ball, and he turned around and just stuck his butt out at the ball. We're not really sure why, but I did not do that. I would like the record to show that the ball bounded all over the place and ended up essentially just making its way right to our feet.
It's a pretty cool ball to have, though, with the Futures game stamp on it. Not many people can have one of those, so that's pretty cool to have.
Yeah, Futures game ball, pretty cool. I jotted down who was on the mound, who was in the box. Fortunately, it wasn't like Dylan Cruz or anything like that, but hey, beggars can't be choosers. Pretty cool experience, no doubt.
And Grant gave us a quick recap of what happened at the Futures game in the Futures, I believe it's the skills competition that Brady House participated in. He gave us a little bit of a rundown of that on our last bonus episode where we broke down the news on Hunter Harvey being traded to Kansas City. You can go back and listen to that to get a recap from that. But what we are here to talk about today is the MLB draft. The Nationals had three picks in the top 44. The first two rounds took place on Sunday night, live from Texas. And Grant Paulson was in attendance, and he's going to tell us more about the draftees that the Nationals were able to nab. With the 10th overall pick in the first round, the Nationals drafted a shortstop slash outfielder out of Wake Forest by the name of Seaver King, a member of the Wake Forest Demon Deacons, who is 6'1", 195, and is coming in as the 10th overall pick for the Washington Nationals. Grant, tell us about Seaver King from Wake Forest.
Yeah, so I'm actually a big, big fan of Seaver King's as a player, as a dude. I've interviewed him a few times leading up to the draft. He's not only a great story, but a great interview, I would say, as well. He's just a smart, really interesting, thoughtful guy. But not a big person at all. About 6 foot is what he's listed. He's actually listed at sub 200 pounds at 195. You mentioned that he's a shortstop. That's what the Nats announced him as. I texted somebody high up in the organization, and they definitely are going to give him every chance to play shortstop. But for the record, he didn't do that at Wake Forest. He was previously a shortstop, but they have an excellent player at the position who's going to go early in the first round next year. And so he had to move off that spot. So he was kind of looking for a home. They started him this year in center field, which he'd never played before. He ended up settling in at third base defensively. That's where he played most of this year. My guess is that as a professional, he could play center field. I think depending on how much power comes, you know, maybe he could play third base. Again, you're going to give him every opportunity to play short. What I will tell you is that the head coach at Wake Forest, it's the best program in America. They had three players go in the top 10. A guy named Tom Walter, he told me a couple weeks ago that he really does believe Seaver King is a shortstop, can play that position professionally. And the only reason he didn't, as I said, is because they had an elite glove there, and they didn't have a need necessarily for him to play that spot. But the story on Seaver King is pretty unbelievable. He was actually a Division II baseball player at Wingate until this season. He played for Team USA while at Division II Wingate, which is very rare that D2 players are on Team USA, and he excelled and he thrived, and I think he turned a lot of heads, and Wake was already all over him, but I think it only helped him even more in his confidence that he could come to a power conference, you know, like the ACC, and have success at the highest level of Division I. He transfers to Wake Forest in one of his early practices. He's going one-on-one in the cage in live BP against Chase Burns, and he hits a monster home run. And I think he kind of got the whole team's attention, like, who the hell is this kid? Burns, as you guys know, is the most electric arm in the country, who went second overall last night. So there's some good and some bad here, right? Seaver King, unbelievably athletic. One of the things you're going to hear about him is he's always smiling, right? He has a lot of fun. He is your prototypical, like, Energizer Bunny-type player. I think he's a fan favorite in that regard. 60 games this year, hit about .310, got on base at a .375 clip, slugged about .570, so it was a .950 OPS, 25 walks, 34 strikeouts, and he can run a little bit, 11 for 12 in stolen bases. But here's where I'm conflicted on this pick some, okay? I'm conflicted on this pick a little bit because there are major adjustments and progressions that need to be made in the batter's box with his swing decisions. And if we're just being frank, while I think the Nats are getting better here recently at developing talent, the adjustment of swing and miss hitters has not been seamless yet, right? Like, you're looking at guys like Elijah Green. Now, the good news is Seaver King doesn't swing and miss a ton. The problem is that he chases a lot. 32% chase rate this year. Average in college baseball was 23%. So that means he expands the strike zone. And even though he doesn't always swing and miss, like, making contact, as we know, of pitches out of the batter's box is a problem. The other thing you're going to see is with the swing decisions, he just swings a lot, you know, well above average. I think 51 or so percent of the time, Caglione went in the top of this draft, who was kind of known as a guy who swings at everything and needs to tweak some swing decisions, was about 53%. So it was similar there. And then the last thing I would say is, and I think this is the easiest thing to tweak maybe, but it was a lot of ground balls. Over half of his batted balls were on the ground, which is not ideal. His launch angle, they showed at the combine. And I'm not sure, frankly, if that's from the season or if that was from his – I wouldn't have been, I don't think, in his combine work in a cage, obviously. So it had to be his season. Launch angle was over minus 7 degrees, meaning – you know, you step up to the plate, the ball's going down, not up off the bat more often than not. So there are definitely some swing things that have to happen here. For that reason, a little bit of an offensive project, so to speak. But it's athleticism, it's tools, it's a high makeup guy, 21-year-old college player who theoretically can move quickly if he irons those things out. And he's, again, a great story in that you just don't talk to guys on draft night in round one who a year earlier had been at Division II, and for him to go to D2 to playing at Wake as one of their more impactful players to now drafted in the top 10 is astounding.
I mean, three Wake Forest guys going top 10. That's a heck of a recruiting pitch for Wake Forest. And this is a guy, just looking at MLB Pipeline and what they have, his tools at a hit at 55, power at 45, run at 65, arm at 55, and field at 55. The thing that stands out to me there is the power is at 45, But you saw the coverage last night. You talked to people around, like, you, this guy has more power than probably a 45 power guy. And like, Wake Forest posted a video of a home run that he hit against Florida State, and their baseball analytics tweeted out that it was 114 off the bat, 28 degree launch angle, 461 feet. It doesn't sound like a 45 power guy to me. So, you know, he's going to have a little more power than maybe he's advertised with on, you know, MLB Pipeline. But it's intriguing, Grant, because like you laid out, their track record of developing hitters hasn't necessarily been the best. Even though we've seen some strides over the last couple of years, it still isn't necessarily like they've, you know, developed a stud yet. And we'll see what happens with Cruz and House. But this is a guy that's going to take some development. And this is also something where, you know, they chose this guy because of, you know, trading for that 39th pick in the Hunter Harvey deal and theoretically going over slot for a couple of later picks. This is probably an under slot pick here. So they chose him over a guy like a Bryce Rayner, who would have taken development as well, a shortstop coming out of high school. But there's a lot of tools here for a guy that you went under slot with that could end up being an impactful player. And he's a dynamic athlete, a guy that can run, that can play center field, like you said. Maybe he sticks it short, can play third base. He just seems like a very dynamic player that you got under slot at 10. So, you know, if you wanted to see them go with a Rayner, I can understand that. But I don't hate the idea of going under slot here to, you know, kind of go over slot as we record on Monday. We haven't even seen what they've done, you know, in the third round and on. Maybe they continue to go over slot a little bit with some of these guys. But I think it was a strategy of theirs, considering that they got that 39th pick, to go under slot here at 10 and to get a guy with the upside of a Seaver King, even though there are some different things that you need to look at, like the chase rate. You said 32%. You know, if you want some context, CJ at the half is 36.6%. So slightly less chase than CJ, but approaching that sort of level. But he also isn't someone that's striking out an alarming amount. So it's something they'll have to work on with him. There's going to be some development needed, but there's a very high upside with Seaver King.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You comp him to CJ. Obviously, even at the college level, you would think theoretically, the stuff's not as good. Like, the chase is going to be even lower. And I mean, you're 9% above average chase rate. You know, as an elite player going in the top 10, you don't want to be 9% below in anything, right? But one other thing I want to point out real quick before we move on from him, this was a new draft department for the Nationals. Danny Haas came over with, you know, I've been with the Orioles, among other teams. Same with Brad Sialik, who was helping to run the amateur department, those two guys. This was a different pick, I feel like, than they've made in the first round in a long time. I know they went college bat with Dylan Cruz last year. I think that was different. That's like elite, top of the board, can't miss kind of perception on draft night situation. Like, if you look down the board a little bit, when's the last time they went college bat? Just, you know, it hasn't really happened. It's been college arms, Kate Cavalli, you know, high school bats, Brady House. So clearly there was a different philosophy. Also college bat with like some flexibility as far as position and, you know, maybe some risk in terms of whether or not he stays up the middle. I just think it was clearly like we wondered how different will the philosophy be with the new mindset that they brought in and a new department. And I think the answer was that they did go away from trend a little bit. So I find that exciting, too, because they're trying to do things differently than they have for a long, long time.
If you have a badass bank card, do you have a pink one or the black one? I've got to say, both colors look and feel like a badge of honor. It's one of those little things that actually reflects how you've moved through life. Confident, intentional, and not afraid to do things differently. And that's really what Badass Bank is about. It was created to deliver true customer service, and honestly, you feel that. It's not just talk. They show up, they support you, and they make managing money feel a lot more human. What I love most is who they're for. Badass Bank is for the everyday badass, the people pushing through hard things, showing up for their families, rewriting their stories. Built by industry disruptors and backed by decades of banking experience, they're here to challenge the status quo and give you real control over your financial future. Badass Bank is looking for customers who expect more. So the question is, are you badass material? Consider this your invitation. Find your inner badass and visit BADASS.bank.
Member FDIC.
Last night was actually a record in terms of the amount of college players that were chosen to start the draft. The first 8 picks were college players. It wasn't until pick 9 where a high school shortstop was taken in Connor Griffin. And Siever King was sandwiched by a couple of shortstops out of high school, with Connor Griffin selected at 9 and Bryce Rayner, as Toby mentioned, was selected right after the Nationals at 11. The next pick was pick 39, which was a competitive balance pick that was acquired in Saturday's trade, where Hunter Harvey came was sent to the Kansas City Royals in exchange for Caden Wallace and that 39th overall competitive balance pick there from the Royals. And with that pick, the Nationals selected a catcher out of California by the name of Caleb Lomavita. Grant, give us some details on Caleb.
Yeah, so two things. One, I'm glad you brought up that this was the Harvey deal, because what a ridiculous trade that was, you know, in a good way for the Nationals. I mean, to have the number 2 prospect from Kansas City will come over, and then to add one of the top 40 players in this draft class. Lomavita was ranked 33rd by MLB Pipeline in the class, I think higher than that in a couple of places. He has been a projected first rounder for a year. When we started doing our draft prep for MLB Radio, and I ended up interviewing like 20 or more of these guys, Lomavita was one of the first 2 players we interviewed, which it wasn't to say he was at the top of the rankings, but like it was a very safe bet that he was going to hear his name called early on draft night. This is a guy who went to St. Louis High School in Hawaii. I bring that up because there have been big leaguers from that high school pretty consistently. It's the number 1 baseball and sports high school in Hawaii. Jordan Yamamoto, Brandon League went there. The Tuiasa Sopos, I think, from football standpoint, went there. He has just been a very steady, consistent contributor in college, right? As a freshman at Cal, he had a 980 OPS and homered 16 times as a sophomore. He ended up going to the Cape with a wood bat and showing that he could roll the pole with wood, and I thought that really helped him a lot. His bat profile continuing to improve when everyone kind of knew he had some natural catching skills, I think really, really helped him. He cut down a lot last year, I thought, on some of his bad or things needed to be worked on offensively, including his chase rate. But I think what you get here is a guy who has a chance to, especially for a catcher, but it's going to have a solid batting average for a catcher, you know, 250, 260, 270, whatever it is. He's going to have a tick above average power. And for a catcher, I would say considerably above average power. And there's really no major hole. Like, he is graded on a scouting scale 50 or better in all capacities, kind of across the board. I think he has the athleticism and some twitch to the point where he could play third if he needed to, right? He could play left field or something like that if for some reason he got, you know, moved out from behind the plate. But that's not going to happen. Like, this is absolutely a catcher, in my opinion. He's arguably, you know, one of the better catchers in the nation. And he's just I would say there's nothing sexy. There's no, like, super plus tool. Maybe the arm, if you want to grade it 60, would be his best attribute. But it's a really solid, high floor, lower ceiling kind of pick. And at 39, the value was pretty awesome, I thought, to get Lomavita. I mean, just to round this down, I'll say this. Like, there were people this week saying that there's a chance if the Nationals wanted to cut a deal with someone at 10 and then spend big on, like, a high school arm later, that Lomavita could be in the mix for them. So that would have been an overdraft by a good bit. But my point is, like, people knew they were on him, and I think there was an idea that he was going to be a first-round catcher anyway. So to get that value is great, and to get this in the Harvey deal is, again, I just don't know how Rizzo pulled that off.
Yeah, I think going back to the Harvey deal real quick, like, you get Caden Wallace, who was the number 2 prospect in the Royals organization, and then you got your choice of a guy, which I think is huge here, because you get to pick Lomavita. You could have gone with a high school arm. You could have done a couple of different things. It was their choice with what to do. They ultimately go with the catcher and Caleb Lomavita, and I like that he's kind of just solid all the way around. Like you said, maybe a little bit of a lower ceiling, but, you know, when you think about the catcher position, you know, you thought maybe there was going to be solid with K-Bert Ruiz, and there have been some question marks with how he's played this season. So you get a guy that could be, you know, the catcher of the future if need be, and he's just solid at everything and can help you there. And Mark Zuckerman of Masson tweeted out that this is the first time the Nationals have ever used a first or a second round pick on a catcher. So back to your point a little bit earlier, Grant, like you got new people in there in the war room helping out. This is the first time you've seen the Nationals go with a catcher this early ever. So it shows that there's new things going on. I know people are going to look and say Bryce Harper. Harper was drafted as a JUCO as a catcher, but he was never going to play catcher. This is an actual true catcher that the Nationals are drafting here. So I'm intrigued to see how he does, but I like the fact that you get a guy coming off of that Hunter Harvey deal where you essentially added probably two of your top 10 to 12 prospects in that Harvey deal, including Loma Vita, who could be your catcher of the future, depending upon how Kaybert does. And even if Kaybert is able to kind of bounce back, maybe he can be a solid second catcher or, kind of a utility guy with catching ability. Like, I think it's just a solid addition to the organization when you look at some of the other catchers in the organization and maybe they don't have, big league starter type potential, whereas I think Loma Vita could.
Yeah, Caden Wallace comes over from Kansas City Royals. He was their number two prospect. He is now the number six prospect in the Nationals organization as he slides in right between Cade Cavalli, who's at number five, and Elijah Green, who's at number seven. I was watching the MLB draft coverage last night on MLB Network, and Jim Callis actually said, when speaking of Loma Vita, that he compares Loma Vita a little bit to Wilson Contreras because Loma Vita doesn't really take walks, but also supplies some big time power as well as some personality. Does that sound right at all to you, Grant?
So I love that comp. I'm hearing it. I haven't heard that at all. And I've never thought about those two in the same light because Contreras is kind of one of these like lightning rod electricity players. And Loma Vita, at least in terms of how he comes off to me from outside looking in, is like way more like just calm, stoic, kind of one of the guys. But he's definitely got the power. I mean, we're talking about 15 homers, 13 doubles. He slugged .586 this year. The OPS was .980 again, which he had a couple times. He's also athletic. Like, that's what I really like. I mean, he stole 12 bags in 16 attempts this year in college. I talked to him about that. And he basically said he wants that to be part of his game. Like, he thinks he could be a catcher who can run and who's not going to clog up the base paths. So that's what I like, and maybe that's where the Contreras comp comes in, is like there's nothing he really doesn't do. Again, I would say it's a lot of average tools more so than anything that's overly plus. Maybe you'd slap a plus grade on the arm. But, yeah, I think he's just a safe bet to be a big league catcher. Like, I really liked the pick. I had no problem with it at all.
Well, and going off of that with the arm, Grant, like, we'll see when this ABS system and the challenge system comes to the majors, but, theoretically that could be there in 2 years. And so maybe framing isn't as big a deal. It's going to be, maybe we see a little bit of a trend at the catcher position where it's more about having a big arm back there versus framing when that system gets in there. So having a guy with a plus arm, but also I think, when you hear the Contreras comp there, obviously that's really encouraging, but I think it goes more so to the athleticism, like you were pointing out. You think of Wilson Contreras when he was with the Cubs, coming up early on, he was a very athletic catcher that could do a lot of things. I think that's probably where that comp comes from.
In the second round, the Nationals had the 44th overall pick, and they did get a high school bat by the name of Luke Dickerson, a shortstop, 5'11", 197 pounds, out of Morris Knowles High School in New Jersey. Tell us more about Luke Dickerson, Grant.
He came on like gangbusters at the end of the draft process, and this is not uncommon in the Northeast. So he played at New Jersey High School, Morris Knowles. What's funny is I saw Kevin Franzen last night in the lobby of the hotel out here in Texas. And we were texting, joking before that. And he's like, we got Trout. And the joke with this is that, like, anytime you draft a player out of New Jersey who kind of pops up in his final year of the draft and, like, takes off, when the weather gets warmer and starts hitting bombs, everyone says, maybe he's the next Mike Trout, because that's kind of the story with him. But Dickerson is... he's an 18-year-old, a little under 6 foot. By the way, the average Hall of Famer in Major League Baseball, FYI, is 5'11". So, a lot of times I think when people hear sub 6 foot, it's like a turnoff, but it shouldn't be. You got, shorter arms, and you can get to the baseball, and sometimes it can help with kind of a short swing. But they pick him at 44, I think, for a couple reasons. All right, so number one, he, because of the weather in the Northeast, like I said, it wasn't really until kind of later into the high school baseball season that everyone started watching him. He was not a guy that was on a ton of radars the last few years. He had a combined 16 home runs in high school in his first three seasons, and they hit 18 this year. He stole 27 bases, showed some speed, hit almost 470. I try not to get too much into high school statistics. I will just tell you that the high school baseball in New Jersey was pretty damn good this year. Had a slug over 900. He's very athletic. He played a bunch of sports. He played basketball. He played football. I believe I saw somewhere, I've got to ask him about this, that he also played ice hockey. So he played a little bit of everything, which is another reason why he wasn't on a ton of baseball radars, because he was not one of these kids playing baseball year-round, going to every showcase, being at every, you know, event that he could. Like, he was always playing something else. He can run, and he's got power, and that's why they drafted him. I think there's questions with the hit tool so far. I mean, the grade is below average on him if you look at hit, but the power is a 55, being 50 is average, and the run is 60. I even saw that he had some 6-3, 60 times, which as a, you know, a physical guy, that's a like a term you hear scouts use, right? Physical, meaning like thick, muscular. He's not like a limmy guy or a slender guy. He looks like he's in the weight room, like an NFL fullback or something. He's got a little of that to him. But to run some 6-3 times and to be able to hit the ball over the fence as much as he does, like they're looking for a power-speed combo, someone with some ceiling here that could take off. And you like that guy that shows up really late in the draft process, because the idea is there's some projection. He's just kind of coming into his own. So it's a much higher ceiling pick than, say, Loma Vita. Obviously, there's a lot more risk when you go with an 18-year-old high school bat as well. But a really, really interesting pick for the Nationals at 44.
Yeah, intriguing. He's got a commitment to Virginia, so they'll have to make sure they sign him away from that, assuming they want him to get in the organization. And to your point, Grant, he helped them win a state championship in hockey. So yeah, he was a hockey player as well. So, you know, sometimes you see these multi-sport guys able to do a little bit of everything, and he's going to clearly have a diverse skill set with just his ability to play all these different sports. And it's intriguing. Again, it goes back to what we were talking about with Seaver King. Development is going to be key when you draft a high schooler, especially a high school bat. Like we've seen, you know, thinking back to Travis Sikora last year, we've seen some nice strides on the pitching side with a high schooler there, but it seemingly has been a little bit of a struggle at times with high school bats. So I'm intrigued to see how they're able to develop him. You like the profile. You like the fact that you got some power and run ability. And, you know, just because he's 5'11 now, he's also 18 years old. You know, he's probably going to end up over 6 foot by the time that he's, you know, reaching the bigs. But it's intriguing that, you know, they didn't, when we talked about their minor league system last year when we were down, or earlier this year when we were down at spring training, we talked about how they look like a football team. They didn't necessarily draft football players this time around. You've got a bunch of guys who are right around 6 foot, and, you know, they might be thick, but they're not maybe the most intimidating guys. But maybe they end up with some really solid baseball players in this draft. So I think it just shows that, you know, on all three of these picks, that they definitely have some new philosophy in that war room. And I'm intrigued by this Dickerson pick because, you know, you look at King and you combine that with these picks, you got to be pretty happy with what you came away with the first three picks.
Grant, before we send you back out into the wild down there in Arlington, Texas, any other thoughts on the first three members of the draft class as we head into rounds 3 through 10 on this Monday?
No, I just like that there is a little bit of balance in terms of college and high school. I liked it. You know, they took three bats. They need pitching. There's no doubt. Everybody needs pitching. That goes without saying, right? But if you look at the system right now, you never draft for need. They've certainly got a lot more pitching coming and pitching depth than they have offensive players. I think they did a good job with this new group of, you know, taking some risks as well, like trying to find some ceiling in a draft that is supposedly down. You know, if Seaver King maxes out, you just got a really impressive, quick to the big leagues potential helper in the next couple of years. I think they did well. You know, there's a couple of other guys at 10 I was really disappointed that didn't come off the board of them, including Treya Savage from East Carolina. So we'll see what happens with him. Maybe you end up kicking yourself a little bit, but they were never linked to Seaver King from anybody I was talking to at any point. So I found that pretty cool that they were able to keep that secret.
All right. Well, Grant, we thank you for your coverage. We know you're busy down there in Arlington, Texas. We're going to let you go here. Thanks for joining us back here on Bustin' Loose Baseball to break down the MLB draft for those that are listening.
All right, boys. See ya.